Welcome back, Free Captains and King Killers, to another slightly reduced roster episode of Dead Men Roll No Crits. This is your GM Patrick here, the Grog Master of these last 4 years, and joining me this week in a one-on-one podcast episode is none other than the man in full, the reason for the season, the goat on the boat, and the angel outstanding in his field, the one and only Tyler. Hey, Tyler.
Yarhar.
Yo-ho. Even. A yarhar and a yo-ho. Welcome.
A yo-ho and a
welcome
yarhar.
Back.
An ahoy there.
It is. It is so quiet here, just you and I chatting.
Yeah,
that's it. Just one on one.
I know it. When you're so used to recording with five or six people, and suddenly there's two, you're like, oh my gosh, look at all this air I have to fill.
Yeah,
the tax on
no
tax on my brain. No,
I was about to say, not that I could really rely on you guys to just like go off on tangents or what have you when I need you to, but this is how I feel all the time. I feel like I have to fill like every silence on the podcast.
Listeners, I mean, we had a moment. Well, I can't remember what it was. It was probably year three of the show.
Oh, gosh.
This is for both shows, where you know Patrick had to firmly remind me that it's just like, hey, the editing software cuts the gaps. So when I'm just looking up a rule, don't talk. Just let it go. And because for a while there, anytime I saw was like in Archives of Nethys or like having to do something, I was like, fill the air. It was like we were live. I treated everything like we were live on a stage.
Yeah, it was mostly like if I knew it was going to be like 30 seconds to a minute to like look something up or something really short, I guess, by comparison. I was like, oh yeah, you don't have to say anything here.
I know. We need
it happened so much early on in Starfinder because I like just didn't know the rules super well. Yeah. So I had to look them up all the time. Not that I
got you like a little sign that you could have put up on the call that just is like, please vamp. That way the listeners would know and we could see it.
I was about to say, not that I know the rules now, 7 years later as Starfinder first edition ends its run. But yeah, so we've done one-on-one episodes before, the origin story episodes, and I feel like I almost took some bits of episodes and did little one-on-one bits, especially with Cassius. It feels like you would have private conversations very often on the podcast. But
there were very long scenes with me by myself. There was that time where you used harpies to steal me.
Yeah, that was basically a solo episode.
Yeah, pretty much got tortured and my mind got invaded. It was great.
I'm trying to remember, was that an actual completely solo episode or not?
I think everyone was there, but
they just couldn't do nothing.
Yeah, I think they spent 30 minutes of their life just listening to you and I go at it. So,
oakley dokley.
That series of reactions, though.
Sorry, we paused the podcast. The wife just came in from walking the dog and said she saw a family of rats.
Oh.
An entire family. And Tyler just had to watch for like a minute as my face was like horrified and disgusted.
The series of like scrunched eyebrows and like abject horror
faces. Shaking my head like, ugh.
We're quite good.
You were talking about these solo episodes, and we did an origin episode, and this is kind of not an outro episode, but this is a little bit of a time skip kind of episode as we look at the characters here at the end of the campaign. I'm not sure where this episode's going to go because we're going to have a one-on-one episode for Cassius, for Alaris, for Candoso, and even for Honto. So this could be the first one. It could be the last. It probably is going to be the first one because, I will say this one is going to pick up. Maybe the other ones don't, but this one is going to pick up right where we left off at the end of episode 192 of the podcast. King Cassius just getting done with the coronation ceremony of the, you know, the hurricane crown sitting upon your head and huzzas, yo-hos, hear-hears from a jubilant crowd around you and Hangman's Square.
We love you, Cassius.
Cassius. Oh man, he's so cool. That's, you hear someone say that and you look down and there's Scrimshaw Jack like, giving you the old thumbs up. He's so cool, right, everybody?
What a hype man.
Yeah, you've gone from barely holding a ship together for many years to having just edged out the de facto second in command, the ruler of Quintessa Fairwind, for a shot here at the crown, the first time it has changed hands in nearly 40 years, four decades. And yeah, as you stand upon that high platform here, you see, you know, the place you've earned amongst the free captain allies, maybe the begrudging respect of hard cells like Avamar, Sornash, and Aranax and Demian, and and behind you on the platform are your trusted allies, now captains and pirate lords in their own right, Ponto, Candoso, Alaris. It's only been a week since we recorded episode 192, but did you have some time to think about what Cassius says here, his first words, his speeches or proclamations to address the shackles? You don't have to say it in character, but you can just describe kind of like how you're going about it.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, Cassius hasn't had a lot of time because it was only, you know, from the death of Bonefist, it was 2 days before.
Yeah, this is probably a good week after the council vote.
Yeah.
So it's been a pretty rough couple weeks.
Yeah, and you know, he hasn't had a lot of time to think of too much what he wants to do or what he wants to say. But there are two things that stuck in his mind, you know, pretty immediately. And so, you know, as he addresses this crowd, you know, I think one of his proclamations would be that the Shackles' view on, you know, slavery and press ganging the status quo will no longer be an acceptable course of action. Mm-hmm. And that the Free Captain's Regatta, the next Free Captain's Regatta will contain extra surprises and rewards for those who want to pursue the ability to become free captains. And, you know, then he will just kind of capstone it off with that the Shackles had, you know, been in an era of, you know, tyranny in quite literal shackles. And, you know, we are now entering our golden age. And, you know, as he does that, you know, the crown kind of morphs into this, you know, almost this like golden watered current that kind of halos his head as he's kind of wanting to, you know, symbolize that with his ascension to the throne will come the, you know, ascension of the whole area, you know, of all pirates.
You just saying that, all I can hear in my head is the Pirates of the Caribbean theme, like really picking up. Yeah. You know, like they just went from like the very soft background soundtrack to like full blast Dolby speakers blasting your eardrums. I don't think I've ever seen any of those movies in theater, but I kind of wish I had. It seemed like fun.
Same. I saw the second one, I think, in theaters.
That's a good one.
And it was such a terrible experience because it was a fun experience. We sat in line. I invited a ton of friends because everybody wanted to go see the movie with me. And so I had about, I think there was like 11 of us, and we sat in line with a portable DVD player and we played the first one while waiting in line. And then I got my girlfriend at the time got mad at me because I wasn't paying enough attention to her while we were in the line. And so it was a bit of a focused. Yeah. Yeah. I don't blame her too much for feeling that way. Cause I was pretty lost in the sauce. So it was just, that was way too many people to bring, but I still had a good time for the most part. And yeah, I was happy that I got to see at least that one in theaters. Wish I could have seen the first one, but yeah, sadly did not.
Need baby Besmara to grow up already so you can watch the new Pirates of the Caribbean movies that they're making in theater with her. She needs to get up to that PG-13 age.
I'll have to be really quick with the blinder.
Right. So given your crowd what they want, which is seeing this crown form around your head, there's mixed reactions to your speech. You know, there's a lot of looks of surprise, but maybe also some confusion, and other folks downright peeved that you are indeed mixing up the status quo. I don't know if it was very tyrannical under Kurdak Bonefist so much as it was definitely stagnating and, you know, allowing a lot of injustice in the pirate realm to kind of go unchecked.
That's true. He was more tyrannical with his own power. Like he would not let someone, you know, endanger his power on the throne, but he didn't out and dominate others.
Yes, he wielded the members of the Pirate Council like cudgels and kind of played them against one another to make sure that he still had their respect, still had sway over them. And I mean, you've been to a couple of the Pirate Council meetings, and they were not great.
No.
Everyone else in the crowd, you see a lot of smiling faces, a lot of astonished faces, and maybe a certain Port Peril guard who looks very, very confused when he kind of gets a good look at you. And we see that he turns to the pirate next to him and is like, oh, isn't that guy named Cornish Hamlin or something like that? I thought he was named Cornish Hamlin. He beat me up a couple months ago.
good old Giles Hamish.
That's the name, right? Right. But as you stand in the middle of the crowd, soaking up their applause, suddenly a shiver runs up your spine as quickly the skies turn gray and dark, as if a storm had covered up Port Peril. And as you blink, you see creatures flying through the sky above the city, above Jeopardy Bay. And then in the distance, what looks like a massive storm whose lightning lights up what seems to be a lumbering beast coming up out of the ocean, moving through the darkness of the stormy weather. But as you blink again, the storm has passed, the entire scene disappeared, and you look around and everyone's continuing to clap, and nobody seems to have noticed what you've seen. There's calls for drinks. There's calls for tomfoolery as the ceremony finishes up. But heavy is the crown. You got perhaps a little glimpse of something awful. Maybe this is the kind of thing that also haunted Kurdak Bonefist. You'll never know. He's in Avernus. He went straight to hell. Did not pass go.
He's got that Bernie energy.
Right. So, you know, we're going to time jump a lot over this episode as we look at basically the first year of your kingship kind of play out in montage mode. And unfortunately, that means in this time, your closest allies kind of going off and doing their own thing for a time.
Yeah.
Neither Candoso, Honto, nor Alaris want to stay with you in Fort Hazard. As there is a lot of, not paperwork, but there's a lot of business that needs to be handled and things.
I was hoping that there was one guy who at the mention of a lot of paperwork and accounting would be excited to hang around.
You can keep Bartleby. You've got to chain him up.
Yeah.
He's willing to do your paperwork still. No, yeah. A lot of finances have to be untangled from the Hurricane King himself. And you find indeed deeply set kind of back channels that seem to be coming from Hypatia, the consort, who indeed seem to be paying a lot of unsavory pirates for hunting down warriors, and a lot of connections to Greenblood on a Black Rock as well out there. But Honto takes some time to collect himself before declaring he's going to head back to Greenblood on a Black Rock and perhaps the Sodden Lands after that. Candoso goes with the Master of Gales towards Drenchport. And Alaris becomes very busy kind of building out her own fleet of ships, becoming an admiral, perhaps, in her own right. One thing I want to ask you is, you technically, I don't know if you can be the ruler of the Isle of Empty Eyes any longer after
taking so I was gonna say
control of poor Peril.
Yeah, Cassius was going to try and install essentially a puppet lord so that he could do whatever he wanted on that island, but not, you know, officially run it.
Well, I don't know if she's puppet material, but Alaris already named the fort after her uncle, and she is a pirate lord already, so she's willing to take over.
Oh, man, I don't know.
Who are you thinking? Don't say Itchy Toe Greg. It's not happening. Finally, Itchy Toe Greg's got a spot on the pirate council.
perhaps not treat her so much as a puppet, but, you know, make sure she understands the tit for tat. But I don't know if Isabella Locke was going to be was maybe interested in taking control, you know, of the property, but, you know, making sure that Cassius has a little beach house there, because there is a mainly the only reason Cassius cares about the Isle of Empty Eyes is because, you know, one of the things that Cassius was determined was to make sure that the cyclops there would he is determined to add them sort of in a way to the Shackles' military might by, you know, appealing to them in some way. If the idea, just to kind of give you an idea of what's in my head, is if any of you've played Elden Ring, the trolls, the giant trolls, there's a sect of them that swears allegiance to Carrion Manor, and they're the Carrion Troll Knights. And that's kind of what I was in hoping to create. I think that's something that Cassius was hoping to create by, you know, investing something, whether it be, you know, money, or by even, you know, giving them back the island, sovereignty of the island, as long as they, you know, with as long as, like, A, there was a small, you know, area for pirates to use it as, like, a island of actual.
It's a big island, you know?
Yeah, right? That was something I think that he really wanted to add, because I think, especially since the throne is of giant make, you know, he thinks that his ego would be stroked tremendously if he was remembered as, you know, this king that had even giants willing to serve him.
Okay, well, I don't know if Isabella Locke is necessarily up to that task, but
yeah,
I was about to say, do you want to offer it to Alaris / Rebecca?
Sure. Because
I can bring that up in her one-on-one, but that's like the task she has to do is
yes,
make all the Cyclops happy.
Yeah,
good luck.
Is make the Cyclops happy, you know, and appeal to some of them, you know, maybe the more, you know, warrior minded of them, for sure.
Right. So that's pretty easily done. After the first month or so, you're mostly left to your own devices as king of the Shackles, though you have the power at any point, you know, to call a council meeting and try and recollect all your friends again and have them help you make decisions about the Shackles and business from, you know, hear their stories and business from all over the edges of the empire. I think in this montage mode, we see weeks turn to months, and eventually folks in Poor Peril get used to you as the new king. And we watch as Kurdak Bonefist statues are torn down, their iron reused for ship's tackle and cannons and things like that. And
Cassius would ask that, like, one be left alone.
Yeah, you can take one for yourself. Maybe one
that's just in, like, well, I mean, they're just, that can just stays out there. I mean, I don't think he cares where it is, but I think he would be adamant that he doesn't want to just, like, erase Kurdak's existence.
Sure, he was wanting to put one in every port, though, so.
Yeah, not sense. That, definitely not that, but, you know.
And I imagine you're not going to be advocating for Cassius Vell statues everywhere.
No, not even Cassius definitely doesn't like having statues made of him.
Right, so yeah, some pretty major business comes up for the Pirate Council at, you know, first. There's a whole group of pirates that are hoping to get funds to rebuild Drenchport and repair bits of Hell Harbor and the fleet there. And over the next few months, we watch from afar as Alaris Delcarin begins to hunt for slavers and Chelish slave vessels, perhaps.
Yeah.
So boarding this was their ships and letting their quarry free.
Yeah, Cassius, Cassius, use ourselves interchangeably, had this other idea, this other avenue towards, because, you know, or this other means to gain eligibility towards the regatta, which is Cassius specifically issuing unique letters of mark, right? Mm-hmm. So normally pirates that want to, you know, pirate in the waters have these letters of mark, and certainly in the Shackles there are many factions and groups that sail around in pirate, but they don't have letters of mark issued from the free captains, but issuing a special letters of mark that are called, you know, Shackle Hunters, or a letter of hunt, and this is a letter of mark that is specifically for the seizing of slave vessels.
Ooh.
And it promises sponsorship into the regatta if the bearer of the mark can present a certain amount or a certain kind of quantity of the slave manifests. Right. Mm-hmm. So the slavers keep the manifest of all their cargo and what they've moved and stuff like that. And so as proof of their taking, if they have the flag, all these things that would typically be on a slaving vessel and they can present them, then they can earn themselves a sponsorship.
So letters of mark that does not produce a free captain, but instead a freedom captain.
Yeah.
Or a freebie captain, if you will, mm-hmm. for shorthand. I love it.
Yeah. And but because one of the things that Cassius didn't want to do off the rip is just to pronounce to everyone that, you know, there is no slavery in the Shackles or there is no slave trade, because there will always, you know, even if he did that, there would still be people out there that would do it.
You can definitely say, it's definitely illegal for captains with their letters. That's easy enough.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of that might be one of kind of a rumor he spreads that you mm-hmm. aren't going to make it too far if this is how you want to compose yourself, and then also issuing, you know, kind of openly issuing these special letters, essentially just making it not lucrative for people to pursue. Why bother with all this when I could just do this other thing and it will be so much better for me.
You know, someone's out there maybe legally defined and able to take anything that you have already taken, all the work mm-hmm. that you've already done, and get remuneration for it. Yeah, I think a successful or a program like that would be pretty successful here. It might take some time, but eventually you do get word back that there were a lot more ships in the Shackles that were profiting from the slave trade, and particularly from Chelish demand for slaves. They just churn through them up there. So likely cracking down on this will, you know, put a pretty large dent in, you know, it'll be a financial blow to the both Imperial Navy and the nation of Cheliax as a whole, stopping that business. And yeah, you're pretty sure you've got a few advisors in your ear saying that with what happened with the defeat of Admiral Drevalia Thrun and a Thrun having died in invading the Shackles, there's going to be some repercussions. But that's probably a long way away, years down the line, as you can just imagine that someone in the house is going to seek revenge. But the loss of the vast majority of her fleet down here, you don't think that is going to come very quickly. But in that entire time, they're going to be hurting. And it's definitely a black eye that has been given to Cheliax, this invasion failing so spectacularly.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that Cassius wants to build and, you know, really kind of shove down the pirate lord's throats is that, you know, the only reason that the Chelish invasion failed was because, you know, Cassius and his armada and Tessa and hers sailed out there and, like, actually attacked them, and that we didn't just hide in our harbors. And so the idea that, like, you know, that when enemies come to the Shackle Shores, that the pirate lords will just return to their, you know, their seats of power and wait out the storm, like, that won't be okay anymore. That, you know, pirate, the expectation will be that folks will, you know, rally their banners and sail to the aid of those who need it, because otherwise we will, like, otherwise the Chelish will win eventually, right?
At the council meeting, you have an enthusiastic backer in Tessa Fairwind in bringing up a defensive kind of plan, perhaps. And there's a good amount of pushback. You're pretty sure, you go through a couple of council meetings, pretty sure Avamar Sornash would also love to see you dead, but he would have hated a Queen Tessa even more. So yeah. He's definitely not popular enough himself to challenge. So he's a big old curmudgeon at every meeting.
And especially because you have some of these lore. Like, I mean, if you look up, I highly encourage, as we're talking about the geopolitics of the Shackles, listeners, to look up a map of the Shackles. Because, like, there's a reason why Drenchport and Hell Harbor got hosed, right? It's because of where they are. And the other...
Yeah, they're basically the furthest north, the closest to Cheliax, the furthest north, and kind of the first line of defense now along... The Isle of Empty Eyes is also kind of like on the ring.
And so you have places like Quint, you have places like Olo and Peril that are nestled in the Shackles. And so for a fleet to get there, they're going to have to get chipped away. They're going to get chipped away at as they get to them. And so they're inherently not going to be as strong just to get to them. And also, fleets just don't have as much room to maneuver around those islands because there's just a ton of reefs and other things around them. Versus, again, Hell Harbor and Drenchport, which are just get battered. And so, you know, we definitely don't want, you know, Cassius does not want to just leave those cities out there just to be, you know, raided and burned down over and over again by, you know, whoever from the north wants to try to encroach upon the Shackles. So it's very easy for the captain of Port Olo, Mr. Sornash, to be like, I like hiding in my hole, because he's pretty governed.
Yeah, you've got enthusiastic support by both Aranax and Demian and the those who survived Drenchport.
Yeah,
obviously
the ten people that showed up that may have survived.
Yeah. Yeah, rallying the council and getting ideas for perhaps some kind of a larger armada duty, maybe to better patrol the northern waters. Tessa brings up a suggestion that perhaps all pirates with a letters of mark be required to sail north to the Eye of Abednego like a year, like maybe have like tours of duty where they're asked to spend time in those northern waters. And if, you know, can obviously pirate and take whatever they can along those sea lanes, but if they don't find anything in that time, in their time kind of guarding the north, perhaps pirates' wages can be paid by the crown. Or
Cassius would agree to that, and
she volunteers to kind of take on an admiralty position to help and enforce the Shackles Hurricane Armada or something along those lines. And Aranax and Demian is more than willing to provide Hell Harbor as a port of call for pirates that want to help out with that.
Yeah. You know, maybe at that meeting, I think Cassius would want to try to speak to Tessa Fairwind and either
my liege. She starts all conversations with you now.
Yeah. And, you know, this has been a few months into his time with the crown. And I think Cassius is feeling the itch of like wanting to go out and do something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he also doesn't want to just kind of leave the throne and leave, you know, duties here to whoever, right?
Bartle. Yeah, I mean, Kurdak, you know, sailed out from Hell or from Port Peril very often. Yeah. And, you know,
he
couldn't be shackled.
Yeah. But Cassius thought he would feel better if he had like a queen consort who, when he wanted to leave out, could, mm-hmm. you know, take responsibility, or when he, you know, if there were major political functions or something that he wanted to go to, that he could take. And so, you know, he wants to find someone that is very capable and, you know, fitting for that position.
I mean, rumors swirl. There's tons of hubbub in Port Peril about you taking a potential queen or consort of some sort. The rumors at first say that you're already married to Lady Agatha Smythe of Tidewater Rock, but
yeah,
she comes out and says that you're more business partners than lovers. There's also rumors that Tessa Fairwind has been seen coming and going to Port Peril a whole bunch, Tyler.
A whole bunch.
I mean, she does have like an estate in Port Peril, so it's not like she's crazy. And most of these do correspond with her coming for pirate council meetings. But
I was going to offer it to Evermar Sorenash, but it doesn't sound like he.
You'll never know unless you pop that question in character. Let's go. No, yeah, lots of rumors indeed about who could lock up the king's heart. Is there someone you have in mind? Do you want to make someone up like a whole new person, Tyler?
A whole new person?
Are there other suitors that you can recall from the adventure that you'd be interested in?
I mean, there's only been three women that Cassius has had really had has you know, even passing fancy towards or has exhibited fancy towards him. Mm-hmm. You know, that's Isabella Locke and Sendara Quinn and Tessa Fairwind. I can't think of any other, you know, and obviously
there are plenty of other crewmates that might have hustled in the sack with Cassius even way back on the
sure, but
the Wormwood. You got all kinds of pirates.
Yeah, but those are like deckhand pirates, and you know,
Cassius, yeah, they can definitely be. Why can't they be Queen Tyler? Oh,
that would be an insane leap of power. Let me responsibility. Just pull
some names out here. Oh yeah, you didn't even think about Halky Tarun.
I feel so bad.
Ex-lover of Barnabas Harrigan. What about Barefoot Sam Stoppins?
No. There is
Tilly Brackets.
No, stop. So many.
I'm gonna keep naming.
There was the pirate lady
and you didn't even mention Sharga. How dare you? She loves Cassius.
she does. I mean, absolutely. But and if this were one of a thing where if Sharga or not Sharga, if Cassius just wanted a fully armored bride bodyguard at all times, I think he would have no problems. Not a single one.
I'm going to ask Rebecca about this and see if Rebecca wants Sharga to make a pass at the king.
There you go. Yeah, and if she answers in the affirmative, then we can.
If Sharga can beat you in one-on-one combat, you have to marry her.
Oh, okay, well then I'll buy the ring now. There's no way I can beat Sharga. Oh my gosh.
Are you at ring size 8? 18? Yeah. Okay, all right, Sharga, calm down. Oh my. Yeah, it doesn't have to be answered now, but obviously the crowd loves a good wedding and a reason for another festival.
Yeah. So. As does, you know, Cassius, and you know, there are in between all these things, I imagine there's plenty of those types of festivities. But you know, at some point, Cassius also would need, you know, and I don't know where on the timeline, perhaps you had envisioned this occurring, But there is a specific individual that needs Cassius's attention, perhaps after things calm down a little bit. A half-brother of sorts.
Old Barnabas. Here again. Indeed, yeah. Where do you have the traitor locked up? Is he in one of these horrific places beneath Lucrehold that you had to explore?
You know, I was thinking about where we keep Harrigan. I had such a you know, bloodborne thought of where he was just like, because I imagine the Tidebreaker just kind of sits at birth, you know, in Fort Hazard.
Not just the Tidebreaker, you got your fixed rising phoenix, and you own Kerdak Bonefist's filthy lucre and the Wormwood itself.
Oh my gosh, I forgot all about the Wormwood.
Yeah, you got a ton of ships. Cool ships.
But just do you know those were the iron gibbets, where it was like a almost like a bodysuit made of iron bars that kept you in like a fixed position? So having a
like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, so having a iron gibbet formed in the shape of a bowsprit, like those typically, which are like usually like really flowy maiden types, but instead having it be this gibbet that we forced Harrigan into, and that's where he spent his days. And I was like, oh, that's the dark timeline. That's lawful evil Cassius.
The only one to keep him company is Scrimshaw Jack. whittling away for hours talking about everything, and there's like a bit, like a horse's bit in Barnabas's mouth preventing him from telling him to shut up.
I know, I imagine him being in Fort Hazard.
Down in the dungeon, or in like a locked chamber?
Just in a locked chamber, yeah. Not even like a, I don't even think he would put him in a traditional jail cell, you know, like with stone and iron, but just a bare room. A lock, you know, just kind of a, you're almost more like a, what is it called? I don't know. House arrest. He's under house arrest.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if you go and visit him, I think I described it last week as he's both unhappy with his failure, but as you come in like your full regalia, your king's regalia, maybe months later, he does seem pretty, pretty happy that Kerdak Bonefist is dead. It says, look what you have done with yourself. Exactly what I've always wanted to see. The king disposed. While I thought it would be me, someone else sitting upon the throne. What brings you here, Cassius?
Well, mate, we've had you. I've been able to keep you parked down here for this time, but your future needs to be decided. I've got plenty of people who want to see dragged out and dragged along the barnacled hole, and they have their reasons for wanting that, but I also have the woman who helped raise me asking to somehow see you walk out of here, you know, with a future. So I have a responsibility as both a adopted son and a king that I am having to weigh and try to figure out, you know, what to do with you, mate, now. So I thought I'd come down here and see, you know, what does Harrigan want with the rest of his life?
I would love to sail once more, but I understand. Perhaps I'm not to be trusted after I was turned by the Chiliacs. They caught me on the open seas. They murdered my crew and said if I did not work with them, then they would have me killed by one of their devils. I believed them, but I agreed and went along with them because my own lust for power aligned with their own dark, deep desires. Whatever you decide, I am fine with it, but I understand that there are many that sail these seas that if you were to grant me freedom, I might have a target on my back. And it might not be long for me if I were to walk off this isle. But perhaps that is a way to go.
You know, Cassius is kind of listening as he's walking around, and he says, well, I have two proposals for you. One is pretty straightforward, and the other one is, well, a little more flashy, but
perhaps in the long run can give you some peace of mind. On one hand, I can announce that I've sentenced you to a life of, what's it called, reparations.
Because one of the things that I think, if I recall correctly, Harrigan raised like a whole bunch of towns and villages along the, was it the Mwangi coast? It was where he picked up Nadja and...
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, they resisted, so his pirate crews...
Yeah, so that whole area, I imagine, needs rebuilding. And so, you know, one of Cassius's ideas was to make Harrigan spend X amount of, you know, time having to rebuild what he kind of tore down as kind of a means of justice. But, you know, Cassius also offers a more, a greedier approach, which is simply the old kill him, and then switch his bodies and resurrect him in secret and send him out.
Yeah. You can, not a resurrection, but a reincarnation
ritual. Yeah.
I was about to say, that's the fate that many a warrior in green blood on a black rock got. It's getting popped into another body. Yeah, he's amenable to both. If he says the latter would allow him to sail again, you know, he seems a little contrite as well, you know, as you're talking to him. So he's willing to face death quite literally. Maybe start over afresh, start as a deckhand somewhere.
Then I think that'd be best. The people who people get the public execution that they want. I seem like a king that is unwilling to forgive certain transgressions against the crown, and you get to feel the wind one, you know, at least for the rest of your lifetime, and I will certainly make sure that our family back home knows that, you know,
he's like a halfling now.
who you really are. And I promise I will also try to make sure that you're in a good body, you know, like I'll do my best.
Yeah, do you have like indeed a large public execution? Like, do you make sure everyone sees him hanging or what have you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of what. I imagine it's not. I definitely don't want to do the hanging thing. Cassius wants to be nice. Well, I don't know what's nicer, hanging or the guillotine. I was imagining the guillotine is more humane.
I think it is. Yeah, it's a little. It's for. I want to say reserved for people of higher status. You know, he's down there as far as his crimes are concerned, pretty much bottom of the barrel. You know, being a traitor to. Free captains, so people they'd love to see him dance.
that can be his. I guess that can be his burden to bear. Seems extra mean to me in my modern sensibilities, but we aren't in modern sensibilities. So,
I was about to say, does Cassius have to play it up and seem like he's enjoying this, or?
I don't think Cassius would make it seem like he's enjoying it. I think he would, you know, treat it very seriously. Because he's trying to make him an example. And so I think he carries a very somber tone.
Do you tell anyone else about this plan to secretly resurrect him? Is this something for the king's
eyes only? Yes, Sharga would know, because Sharga would be probably in charge of the body swap. Because we need someone that can rapidly move a very heavy man. And I think Cassius would trust Sharga to do that.
Yeah.
And also, he also, for that particular week or whenever that happens, he sends Bartleby away. He sends Bartleby on like a vacation somewhere.
I'm sure Bartleby wants to get back north and see his family. So maybe he can.
Yeah. So yeah, he sends him out. Cassius doesn't completely understand where clerics of Pharasma draw the line at this sort of thing, but he decides he doesn't want to gamble.
Yeah. Right. I don't want to take too much time on this, but I think it's too fun. If the ritual, let's see, I'm just going to say the ritual is successful, because you can, I mean, it's going to be thousands of gold pieces, and
I'll deduct it from the treasure we received at the end of the campaign.
I was about to say, I think that having all the treasure of a dead pirate king, you're probably good for it, but just a success. And do you want to roll a d20 for me? I didn't think we were going to have much cause for rolling d20, but
for d20, but here we are.
Yeah.
I really hope I don't roll like a tiefling or something. That would seem so mean.
But perhaps fitting.
Yeah, perhaps fitting. So
a 4 on this is a common ancestry, and just a reminder, the common ones in Pathfinder 2nd edition are dwarf, elf, gnome, goblin, halfling, human, leshy, or orc.
Oh man, could you, well, do you want to just roll it randomly?
Yeah, oh, now that's what we're doing right now, Tyler.
You want to
roll a d8 for me?
Could you, please don't be a leshy. Please don't be a leshy.
Oh, goodness.
4.
4? Oh, no. Maybe it's worse. Goblin. Oh, no. He's the scariest dark-skinned goblin on the Shackled Sea. I mean,
they're...
Oh. No, you can re-roll that if you want. Like, he starts coming back as a goblin and you turn to the mage who's doing the ritual, and you're like, maybe try again. Do you want something else?
You want me to just roll again? Well, we can say that we can, yeah. Maybe I can, this is my hero point reroll.
I'll allow it.
D8.
It's gonna be a leshy this time.
Yeah.
No, 8 is an orc.
All right, there he is.
Proud, strong people. He actually has kind of big old orc buff muscles.
he was Harry was a big fellow, so this translates a little better.
Starts turning into a goblin, and then you're like, more magic. He buffs up, bulks out.
I just pour creatine and protein powder into the magic. Yeah. It turns into an orc.
Yeah, besides that, I guess one question I wanted to ask is, with all of your kingdom powers here, was there anyone from maybe beyond your immediate inner circle of the higher echelons of your pirate fleet? Anyone beyond that you wanted to promote, give them their own ship, promote to captain, or take over and help you out with the Phoenix or the Filthy Lucre or the Wormwood as captains?
I think that Rosie Cuswell, I think her name.
Oh, yeah, she make a good one.
There are a few people that, yeah, he would want to try to ask and see if they wanted to be at court or, you know, kind of work with him around. Rosie Cuswell, like I said, being one of them. And I think Kook being the other one.
Kook gets the call up?
Yeah.
The Tengu?
Yeah. And probably Tilly Brackett as well. Ooh. And... if
she's got that's a great pirate name. I love it. Tilly Brackett. Yeah. Captain Brackett now.
Yeah. And then Sandara Quinn as well.
Oh yeah. And she's already got multiple ships that are devoting themselves captains to her.
And then he would maybe not offer a ship, but, you know, as a thank you to, like, the information he had, what happened in the past, offer kind of like a retirement spot for Ichito Greg.
Oh, how nice. He wants to go back down to the Rickety Squibs. He wants to go help out down south and just kind of live on the beach there. There's a boar on the cliff that looks like it's been grinding for years to level up and is still not there to take on a level 20 pirate king. But
yeah, and then Owlbear Mahim and Dad Murdering Jim, he would actually give them to Alaris.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure they're already on spider silk. So
but he absolutely makes sure that he's like, oh, I want, I he's like, oh, Alaris, yeah, I want to give you these three.
Albert Mahim and Dead Murdering Jim. Okay, yep.
And then he, you know, maybe he'll retain Fish Guts as cook for oh my gosh, Fort Hazard. Jeez, Louise, I can't even think.
Fort Hazard already has like some of the best chefs in all of the Shackles, and you bring in Fish Guts, he's like well, you know, the line cook from You Can't Say That on Television from Nickelodeon.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, that's what the art looks like to me. Yeah. And he just throws it into complete disarray. It's like, we're doing Meatloaf Mondays. That's what
yes.
When I say it goes, I'm King Chef here now.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, we got some appointments. Towards the end of your first year here, the Free Captain's Regatta comes up and over, and perhaps is presided over by a retiring Master of Gales with him, the soon-to-be Master of Storms, perhaps, in Candoso. And I think you mentioned to me off air you want to open it up to, like, the entire world?
So the idea Cassius sort of had was if one of the would-be lords wins, then, you know, that is the next step in their, I mean, just essentially like exactly what happened with us on the adventure, right? Oh, you won. Oh, yeah.
There's plenty of rough islands that you can send some hapless pirate to try and go conquer.
Right. But, or give them some other challenge. You know, there's a lot of things that can happen in the chapters. But if, especially to, and this is kind of one of the ways, you know, because Cassius is still, changed in many ways, but still very greedy. And, you know, he doesn't, I think one of the things that he would never be content with is how insular the Shackles can feel. And so, you know, he opens it up to all these surrounding nations with the challenge that if they win, that he would issue a rite of safe passage.
Ooh.
So essentially,
an anti-pirate letter of mark.
Yes. So essentially promising them like a pirate escort, perhaps, or just literally a writ of safe passage that would promise that they could have like a fleet, a merchant fleet go through, and
any free captains would let them be, not take their goods. So that's smart in a couple ways, Tyler. One, that ship would be very lucrative and potentially inspire more ships to try and make the run without the safe passage, you know, make the run around Grund and go to the Southlands to try and get materials from down there. So that could like increase just the amount of traffic in and through the Shackles in Toto, but also make some friends. And I think if you do send out invitations across the world here, you know, months in advance, by the time the Free Captain's Regatta shows up, there's tall ships from all over the inner sea, from Tal'Dorei to Andorra. You see treasure ships that sail under the flag of Empress Amaterasu Emiko, steamships from Absalom, trade guilds that have kind of always desired a safe passage through the Shackle, but also some undead bone ships from Geb and other places along the coast. So it's turned into a real wacky race, I think, your first year as king.
It looks fantastic.
It looks like every kind of ship you can imagine, and none of them understand that they're about to get rocked by a hurricane. Here I am.
Yeah, but, you know, it brings, you know, obviously Cassius would pull out the red carpet for everybody, because, you know, he also wants to show off that, you know, there's a new king in town, and he wants there to be trading and all sorts of things that exchange hand. This is kind of like a, almost like a, what do you want to call it? Oh my gosh, why is the thing like a temporary peace treaty, a temporary, we won't, you know, do anything.
Yeah, this is the Olympics of piratedom.
Yeah,
you know? It's cool. Your enemies can, I don't think there are any Chelish vehicles that try for this.
Oh yeah, the Chelish are heck of banned. There's no way. Like,
well, there's, you know, non-Imperial Navy that might be interested. There might be some like trade guilds.
Imperial Navy's banned. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they're allowed.
There's rumors they're juicing. Yeah, their ships are powered by demon blood. That's
you see like 500 demons under the water, like pushing a vessel along.
Hey, can they do that?
There's no rules in the pirates. We gotta
big truck.
Right. So you set all this up and you get to enjoy a huge party on this little island camp waiting near the finish line that you didn't really get to see last time you were doing the race because you were like unconscious, I think, at the very end. But it's very, very exciting coming towards the end of the race. You can share this party on the island with your retinue, your lovers, your friends, any and all pirate council crewmates. You see Scrimshaw Jack and Ichito Greg kind of hovering over the buffet table, everyone else drinking and having a good time. And they've created for you on the island a little throne made out of driftwood and flotsam.
Yay!
Gnarled wood that's pretty comfortable. It's a little stiff back, but yeah. And as you're sitting there drinking and enjoying the stormy afternoon, there's something that stirs in Cassius that you've not felt in a long time. It sounds kind of like the whispering winds of the hurricane, but becomes like a hot breath on your neck, down your stiff shirt. Feels like the ocean spray is just kind of glazing over you, and your eyes roll back a bit as you remember the last few times you've felt this pull. The first time you sailed into the eye of Avendago, your ship waterlogged, sunk, crew dead. The second time, resulting in a near mutiny that caused you to have to turn back, as well as the Phoenix was nearly destroyed once more. Its masts snapped by gale force winds. And the last time you were here, of course, when you sailed the Free Captain's Regatta, you got this pull, this kind of subconscious pull to take a hard right and turn into the storm itself. Yeah, and you recall now the last time you were unconscious here and Alaris took over for the Tidebreaker, you had a very similar vision. You see yourself sailing into the Eye of Amundago, but this time the vision stays with you. It's very clear. You see on the bow of the Tidebreaker some of the best, most veteran sailors of the entire Shackles, and you watch as winds nearly destroy the Tidebreaker, but this time you are able to make it into the middle of the storm, into the great eye of the hurricane. And as you cross the threshold of the raging winds, your vision ends. You're back in the Free Captain's Regatta space, and there's a number of vessels that are getting close to the finish line here in the distance. Perhaps Scrimshaw Jack hands you his little peeping eye device. He's like... Mr. King, sir, Mr. King, sir, look, they're about to cross the finish line.
I have my far lens, and yeah.
All right, I'll try to be nice, sir.
Oh, I'll use that one too, and then I put both of them up. Oh my gosh, it's almost like they're binocular.
That's yeah. Crazy. You're quite a crazy king, you is, sir.
Somebody patent this idea.
Yeah. Make me a pirate lord, says what?
What?
Huh?
Huh?
I'll take that. Thank you. Right. And yeah. Unfortunately, the next few weeks, you are pretty consumed with the vision of once more making perhaps what pirates can officially call the dead men's run to turn into the storm. And you start getting captains giving you plans and collecting stories of people that say they've survived, much like yourself. Getting into like the inner rings, you know, many miles into the Eye of Avendago, and I don't know, maybe you create like a little murder board of like scrolls and like ripped pages of books of accounts and things. Do you think a King Cassius, as basically as powerful as you'll ever get, is willing to make that risk once more to get inside?
I think so. I mean, things are a little different because, you know, he certainly isn't forcing, you know, desperate pirates to go in there. He's bringing loyalists. He's bringing experts.
Who are you bringing? Yeah, who you've met in this adventure do you think would be part of that crack crew?
Just Sharga.
Sharga
is the plan is for Sharga to actually throw the ship through the winds and storm, and I'll just pop out in the center. Because I think that's how strong she is these days. But, you know, I can't.
I don't think so.
Maybe I don't have that quite right in my head.
I mean, you have access to most every in this adventure, you know.
I think the ones that stand out,
put together a dream team.
Yeah, I think the ones that stand out the most, certainly the Master of Gales, if he's willing to.
Yeah, he's retired, so I think he goes by something very non-assuming after he gives up Charlie. Drenchport. I was thinking just the Wind Wizard or something along those lines. Okay. He's like, you know, Gandalf the White. He takes another name, but yeah, he gives up a lot of what he's earned over his lifetime. And if you talk to him about this plan, he's like, oh yes, you will not survive if I'm not there. You're definitely going to die. But I have in my power the ability for at least a short time to not stop the winds, not stop the storms, but to counteract them, to leave you in a state of balance. And if you have those who are able to still sail those choppy waters at the same time, then it is possible.
Yeah. I think, you know, obviously any of the original crews, Team A, Team B, that want to join can join.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps Kovic comes along, as well as Sharga.
Just keep mentioning Sharga. Yeah, you got her.
Yeah, I just reminding everybody.
Yeah, no, I'm sure Alaris would be willing to step off her own ship and come with you on this epic adventure. And if you ask nicely, she can convince Olivier and
Valea
as well. If you Valea want access would be to like a wish Valea spell.
Yeah,
I feel like that's a pretty great ally.
I was thinking about it, but I didn't think you would let me have a genie.
No, maybe she can also bring along like a Cyclops Mariner who's willing, you know, because
their eyes
as
can
soon
see.
As they have like a quick future sight.
Yeah,
basically they can see like if a main mast starts raking, they can like just stand up and like reinforce it or
right,
you know, exactly. turn the ship on a dime with their mad muscle. Yeah, so it's a motley crew, but it is definitely represents the top sailors in all of the shackles that you're able to put together, and also obviously Scrimshaw Jack. And
just in case we need to sacrifice a small child.
Yeah, it is a wild like 5 or 6 hours of sailing into storms. You know, it starts off it's such a barely an inconvenience, the entire leg of the Free Captain's Regatta, you know, all those many miles that you put in are absolutely nothing compared to like hours 3, 4, and 5 of sailing dead center into the hurricane. I've opened up so many of the PDFs. I'm like wondering, it's like, do I have book 3 open? 4 open?
It might be 4.
No, Tempest Rising book 3 has got to be. Howdy, this has been a long near 200 episodes.
One is the Wormwood, 2 is all the miscellaneous ones, 3 is Lord Fetch Quest.
Yeah, so yeah. The track of from Cauldron Rock to Combing Point is only like 100 miles or so, and only about half of that is going straight into the storm, so you have to basically go 10 times the distance of the Free Captain's Regatta. And there are several times where it feels like the ship is going to be pushed over, and all of a sudden a massive storm from the opposite direction kind of comes from the Weather Wizard. The Wind Wizard, that's his name.
Weather Wizard sounds fun. No, I like how
that's a DC villain, a comic villain. But no, he creates a massive storm to kind of counteract it and allow you guys to sail through. Maybe there's some other mages that are able to produce winds that allow the ship to make a direct point in. And the ship suffers a lot of damage as eventually...
At this point, the ship... because Cassius would definitely bring that ship in a bottle gift that he earned so far long back then, and so I imagine that breaks because
there's a
pretty quickly
a lot of repairs that need to be done, as there are dangerous rocks that you come across, much like those in the Free Captain's Regatta. And yeah, things just hit your vessel going like 150 miles per hour as well. So people get hurt. People get ship. The ship gets damaged, but people make it through because you have like 300 people on the ship that are, you know, taking turns. Right. Like that is what is required to make it through this in one piece. And yeah, people do get hurt, but their wounds get healed. And yeah, eventually, all of a sudden, the raging winds die down almost completely as the ship moves into completely calm, still waters. The howling that has nearly deafened you, enraged just a moment ago, quiets completely as if magical spell has been settled on the Tidebreaker. And before you see a massive, giant vertical column of air that stretches for miles and miles and is 10 times as wide across. And at the very top of it, you see fluffy white kind of a halo of hurricane clouds. And beyond that, blue sky. I don't know if you've ever looked at the inside of a hurricane before, but it's pretty wild looking.
It's pretty wild looking.
Beautiful golden sunbeams kind of range down the side of this column of air, illuminating what lies inside this impossible storm. It's pretty boring inside the eye, actually. As you sail forward, you see there seems to be one small island in this, you know, maybe 50 square miles of space here. Absolutely tiny island, but there are hundreds and hundreds of what look like smaller rocks strewn about this place. But as you get closer to them, you see these are isles in their own right. The flotsam and jetsam of thousands of shipwrecks, including perhaps some you can recognize from the Free Captain's Regatta.
Hey, I know that flag.
They're here just kind of rotting in the sun. You see bleached wood as they pile up in large mounds that begin to look like hills or even mountains in this space. And you're pretty sure there's like reef beneath them or perhaps some rocky land, but the wood almost seems to collect here in like a giant swamp of driftwood. But yeah, as you sail in towards the island, you notice that there's a small hut, perhaps a long house on it. The only signs of life in this entire place. Is Cassius ready for an exploration?
Yeah.
It is overgrown with weeds, choked with the debris.
Does not round up and I start spraying.
But yeah, some pirates come with you, but perhaps hang back as the core four are close enough. Some of your best allies and Ichito Greg are there to see this through. And yeah, it doesn't look like anyone's lived here for some time. You walk inside this small hut and it's just a single room with a large straw bed. You see next to it maybe a small bassinet. Most everything has withered away or perhaps rotted and become moldy. There's just a small book on the nearby table, a single tome of pirate lore relating to some of the great pirates of the last century since the Eye of Abednego began. And yeah, it has stories of their ships, their adventures, their foibles, if you will. And along the wall behind the bed, you see all manner of what looks like things pilfered from some of these shipwrecks. It's dozens and dozens of pieces of very fancy nautical equipment from all over the world, mind you, not just the shackles, hundreds of pieces. And then right above the bed, you see a couple of hooks and an empty spot where there is a gap. Something is missing from the wall here.
Cassius pulls out his sextant.
Oh, yes. You numbly fumble in your bag for an object you've regarded for some time, perhaps held on to your entire life, this magically enchanted sextant. And it does seem to fit perfectly on the wall. You kind of put it up there with the other devices, and Hilaris behind you is like, okay, all right, I don't know what that means. But as soon as you place it on there, it just feels right. And all of a sudden, a bell rings out, a ringing clarion bell that is followed by a massive horn, and not just a trumpet. This is a horn that seems to shake the entire building, if not the entire island on which you stand. It's kind of like an earthquake as you're momentarily deafened by the ringing bell, the horn. Everyone races outside and you see a tear forming, a dimensional tear in the fabric of space and time right above the island, hundreds and hundreds of feet in the air. What looks like a roiling storm's edge of purple and blue clouds kind of rips into the fabric of the still air above you. And what looks like a giant rock kind of forms in this magical rift. And as it grows in size, you can see it as kind of descending and getting bigger in your field of view. But you see it for what it really is, maybe a 3/4 or a 1/2 mile across, a gigantic floating island. You watch as water kind of streams off one side of it. And as the magic clouds dissipate, you can see it for what it really is, like almost a massive waterfall hanging off the edge of said island, going right down the edge. Sharga has her axe out. She's ready for whatever's to come here.
I'm slaying it. I don't care what it is. I'm slaying it.
Yeah. Are you willing to fly up?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's floating and the waterfall is like coming down into the sea.
Yeah. It's like a few hundred feet in the air. So anyone with the ability to fly can follow you up here. But flying towards the top of this aisle, you see it is the majority of it is a large lagoon. It is actually the water just kind of bubbling up over the side of the island, makes this waterfall, a lagoon of crystal clear blue waters. You see maybe a 6 tall ships floating here, and other odd objects you can't readily identify, perhaps chariots made out of metal that seem to float in the sky, like skyships.
Oh, skyship.
They all seem stationed and pointing around a rather large castle built upon a green strip in this lagoon. Green strip nearly bifurcating the beautiful blue waters. It is the castle is made of super black, sparkly stonework that seems to kind of catch the light and makes it dance along the bows of the ships. The flags flown on these ships and above the castle are patchwork creations. And as you take a look through your spyglass, they're made up of hundreds, if not thousands, of various pirate flags woven together almost in like dragon-like scales. So each massive flag is dozens and dozens of smaller flags. This is a pretty mystical, magical castle here, Tyler. And as you cross the water, fly across, you can see a lone figure standing among the gates. A figure perhaps you can help me identify. Who's waiting for you here, Tyler, in a magical castle inside the sky? What does she look like?
Is this Taylor Swift?
You got it. Tay-Tay herself.
I mean, I don't know, the only two major female figures that would be maybe be capable of such feats would be, I mean, literally Besmara herself,
queen of, but you would, god of the pirates. Yeah, I think that'd be within her realm.
That would be within her realm, or I don't know, Cassius's mother.
Mm-hmm. I think as you get closer, it looks exactly like the figure that you experienced, kind of stopping you from moving onto Pharasma when you died on the feverish isle back in book one. It looks just like that figure, kind of amorphous in a few ways, to where you see both masculine and feminine features, different heights and things like that, kind of morphing all over the place. But yeah, as you get closer, I think you see someone that doesn't look a ton different from you, of almost half elven humanoid that looks like they have features from another realm, features that can barely be described as human. But you see the same kind of wings of water that you have draped around their shoulders like a cloak, and they welcome you as you get closer, and perhaps exchange some pleasantries and welcomes you and any of your pirate crew that you bring with and invites you into the castle. And we watch as magical lights of every color kind of turn on inside this place as day turns to night. And the tale, Cassius, the Driftwood King, perhaps closes out. Because all that is a tale for if they ever make a mythic campaign of Skull and Shackles.
Yeah.
I swear,
a tale for another lifetime.
You better hope, Tyler. You better hope they never make a Pathfinder 2E adventure path that's set in the Shackles, because you'll be coming back. They're gonna have to kill Cassius in that campaign.
That's true. I'm
gonna have to rewrite so much.
Oh man, yeah, no, I would, and you know what? If it means that I got a pirate 2E campaign, I would accept his fate.
You can't do it. This podcast is ending, Tyler. We'd have to make a new podcast like Dead Men Still Don't Roll No Crits. It's real wordy.
It's real wordy. At some point, it just becomes Stranger Than Fiction.
Can you imagine if we had done this episode with all four players, Tyler?
Oh, if everyone had been here. I'd see a bunch of people asleep at their desks.
Well, I mean, they could be involved in some bits and pieces here, but yeah, they would. This would be like four episodes if everyone was involved.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
it'd be a long one. Right. Absolutely. This is about where I saw us kind of ending, maybe a little open-ended book chapter. As
I like it.
Is not the end of the story for Cassius nor for any of the pirates, because after we do our one-on-one tales, there's still a little bit of adventure left in this AP. I guess not in the technical book. Oh yeah, no, you've made some enemies and you'll be tested as level 20 characters. Don't you worry. Oh, don't you worry.
You're really gonna make me pay for that natural 20 I rolled, aren't you? You're just like
yeah. As we go into September and the end of the podcast, we'll have everyone back for a few more adventures, but first we have to get through all four of our one-on-ones, which I don't know if any of them will be as long as this one. There's so much. We had so much paperwork to do, Tyler.
Yeah, it's hard when you're lording over an entire realm and you're having to create policy changes. Yeah, yeah.
We could have divided this into two episodes, but yeah, we made a long one instead. Well, that's going to do it for this week's one-on-one episode, Tyler. Thanks for being here with me and just you.
Patrick, thank you for the years of pure fantasy for me.
No, they're not over yet.
I spent every single recording session throughout all these years making sure my camera was from the chest up, because
oh no,
otherwise it would not be an appropriate show.
We would watch so many tents being pitched.
So
over the years.
Many dream come true.
I'm gonna cry. Hopefully our listeners think the same as we end Dead Men Roll No Crits. Not the end of the podcast yet, but that is the end of this week's episode. Freebie Captains, Patreon Pirates, everyone that's been listening for near 200 episodes, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on next week's episode of Dead Men Roll No Crits. Yar.
Goodbye.
Yar. Yar.